didn't know where the chicken had gone. She prayed it would go back to pecking at Junie's eyes. The next flash of lightning, she saw chicken feet standing between her and the crack under the door. The thing wasn't more than a foot from her face. Kaylin slowly moved a trembling hand to her brow to cup it over her eyes. She knew that any instant, the chicken monster thing was going to peck her eyes, just like it pecked Junie's eyes. She panted in terror at the mental image of having her eyes pecked out, blood running from ragged, hollow sockets. She would be blind. She would be helpless. She would never again see Richard's gray eyes smiling at her. A bug wriggled in her hair, trying to free itself from a tangle. Kaylin brushed at it, failing to get it off. Suddenly, something hit her head. She cried out. The bug was gone. The chicken had pecked it off her head. Her scalp stung from the sharp hit.
"Thank you," she forced herself to say to the chicken. "Thank you very much. I appreciate it."
She shrieked when the beak struck out, hitting her arm. It was a bug. The chicken hadn't pecked at her arm, but had gobbled up a bug.
"Sorry I screamed," she said. Her voice shook. "You startled me, that's all. Thank you again."
The beak struck hard on the top of her head. This time there was no bug. Kaylin didn't know if the chicken thing thought there was, or if it meant to peck her head. It stung fiercely. She moved her hand back to her eyes.
"Please, don't do that. It hurts. Please, don't peck me."
The beak pinched the vein on the back of her hand over her eyes. The chicken tugged, as if trying to pull a worm from the ground. It was a command. It wanted her hand away from her eyes. The beak gave a sharp tug on her skin. There was no mistaking the meaning in that insistent yank. "Move the hand now," it was saying, "or you'll be sorry." If she made it angry, there was no telling what it was capable of doing to her. Junie lay dead above her as a reminder of the possibilities. She told herself that if it pecked at her eyes, she would have to grab it and try to wring its neck. If she was quick, it could only get in one peck. She would have one eye left. She would have to fight it then, but only if it went for her eyes. Her instincts screamed that such action would be the most foolish, dangerous thing she could do. Both the Birdman and Richard said this was not a chicken. She no longer doubted them. But she might have no choice. If she started, it would be a fight to the death. She held no illusion as to her chances. Nonetheless, she might be forced to fight it, with her last breath if need be, as her father had taught her. The chicken snatched a bigger beakful of her skin along with the vein and twisted. Last warning. Kaylin carefully moved her trembling hand away. The chicken thing cackled softly with satisfaction. Lightning flashed again. She didn't need the light, though. It was only inches away, close enough to feel its breath.
"Please, don't hurt me."
Thunder crashed so loud it hurt. The chicken squawked and spun around. She realized it wasn't thunder, but the door bursting open.
"Kaylin!" It was Richard. "Where are you?"
She sprang to her feet.
"Richard, look out! It's the chicken! It's the chicken!"
Richard grabbed for it. The chicken shot between his legs and out the door. Kaylin went to throw her arms around him, but he blocked her way as he snatched the bow off the shoulder of one of the hunters standing outside. Before the hunter could shy from the sudden lunge, Richard had plucked an arrow from the quiver over the man's shoulder. In the next instant, the arrow was knocked and the string drawn to cheek. The chicken dashed madly across the mud down the passageway. The halting flickers of lightning seemed to freeze the chicken in mid-stride, each flash revealing it with arresting light, and each flash showing it yet farther away. With a twang of the bowstring, the arrow zipped away into the night. Kaylin heard the steel-tipped arrow hit with a solid thunk. In the lightning, she saw the chicken turn to look back at them. The arrow had caught it square in the back of the head. The front half of the arrow protruded from between its parted beak. Blood ran down the shaft, dripping off the arrow's point. It dripped in puddles and matted the bird's hackles. The hunter let out a low whistle of admiration for the shot. The night went dark as thunder rolled and boomed. The next flash of lightning showed the chicken sprinting around a corner. Kaylin followed Richard as he bolted after the fleeing bird. The hunter handed Richard another arrow as they ran. Richard knocked it and put tension on the string, holding it at the ready as they charged around the corner. All three slowed to a halt. There, in the mud, in the middle of the passageway, lay the bloody arrow. The chicken was nowhere to be seen.
"Richard," Kaylin panted, "I believe you now."
"I figured as much," he said. From behind, they heard a great whoosh. Poking their heads back around the corner, they saw the roof of the place where the dead were prepared for burial go up in flames. Through the open door, she saw the floor of straw afire.
"I had a candle. It fell into the straw, but the flame went out," Kalin said. "I'm sure it was out."
"Maybe it was lightning," Richard said as he watched the flames claw at the sky. The harsh light made the buildings all around seem to waver and dance in synchrony with the flames. Despite the distance, Kalin could feel the angry heat against her face. Burning grass and sparks swirled up into the night. Their hunter guardians appeared out of the rain to gather around. The arrow's owner passed it to his fellows, whispering to them that Richard with the temper had shot the evil spirit, chasing it away. Two more people emerged from the shadow around the corner of a building, taking in the leaping flames before joining them. Zed, his unruly white hair dyed a reddish orange by the wash of firelight, held out his hand. A hunter laid the bloody arrow across his palm. Zed inspected the arrow briefly before passing it to Anne. She rolled it in her fingers, sighing as if it confessed its story and confirmed her fears. "It's the chimes," Richard said. "They're here. Now do you believe me?"
"Zed, I saw it," Kalin said. "Richard's right. It was no chicken. It was in there pecking out Junie's eyes. It spoke. It addressed me by title, Mother Confessor."
Reflections of the flames danced in his solemn eyes. He finally nodded.
"You are in a way right, my boy. It is indeed trouble of the gravest sort, but it is not the chimes."
"Zed," Kalin insisted, pointing back toward the burning building. "I'm telling you, it was."
She fell silent as Zed reached out and plucked a striated feather from her hair. He held up the feather, spinning it slowly between a finger and thumb. Before their eyes, it turned to smoke, evaporating into the night air.
"It was a lurk,"
the wizard murmured.
"A lurk?" Richard frowned. "What's a lurk? And how do you know?"
"Anne and I have been casting verification spells," the old wizard said. "You've given us the piece of evidence we needed to be sure. The trace of magic on this arrow confirms our suspicion. We have grave trouble."
"It was conjured by those committed to the Keeper," Anne said. "Those who can use subtractive magic, sisters of the dark."
"Jagang," Richard whispered. "He has sisters of the dark."
Anne nodded.
"The last time Jagang sent an assassin wizard, but you survived it. He now sends something more deadly."
Zed put a hand on Richard's shoulder.
"You were right in your persistence, but wrong in your conclusion. Anne and I are confident we can disassemble the spell that brought it here. Try not to worry. We'll work on it and come up with a solution."
"You still haven't said what this lurk thing is. What's its purpose? What is it sent to do?"
Anne glanced at Zed before she spoke.
"It's conjured from the underworld," she said, "with subtractive magic. It is meant to disrupt magic in this world."
"Just like the chimes," Kalin breathed with alarm.
"It is serious," Zed confirmed, "but nothing like the chimes. Anne and I are hardly novices and not without resources of our own. The lurk is gone for now, thanks to Richard. Unmasked for what it is, it will not soon return. Go get some sleep. Fortunately, Jagang was clumsy and his lurk betrayed itself before it could cause any more harm."
Richard looked back over his shoulder at the crackling fire, as if reasoning through something.
"But how would Jagang..."
"Anne and I need to get some rest, so we can work out precisely what Jagang has done and know how to counter it. It's complex. Let us do what we know we must."
At last, Richard slipped a comforting arm around Kalin's waist and drew her close as he nodded to his grandfather. Richard clasped Zed's shoulder in an affable gesture on the way by as he walked Kalin toward the spirit house. Chapter 11. When Richard started, it woke her. Kalin, her back pressed up against him, wiped her hair from her eyes, hastily trying to gather her senses. Richard sat up, leaving a cold breach where he had been a warm presence. Someone knocked insistently.
"Lord Rawl!" came a muffled voice. "Lord Rawl!"
It hadn't been a dream. Kara was banging on the door. Richard danced into his pants as he rushed to answer her knock. Daylight barged in.
"What is it, Kara?"
"The healer woman sent me to get you. Zed and Anne are sick.
I couldn't understand her words, but I knew she wanted me to go for you.
Richard snatched up his boots. How sick?
By the healer woman's behavior, I don't think it's serious, but I don't know about such things. I thought you would want to see for yourself.
Of course. Yes, we'll be right out. Caitlin was already pulling on her clothes. They were still damp, but at least they weren't dripping wet. What do you think it could be? Richard drew down his black sleeveless undershirt. I've no idea. Disregarding the rest of his outfit, he buckled on his broad belt with the gold-worked pouches and started for the door. He never left the things inside it unguarded. They were too dangerous. He glanced back to see if she was with him. Hopping to keep her balance, Caitlin tugged on her stiff boots.
I meant, do you think it could be the magic? Something wrong with it? Because of the lurk business?
Let's not give our fears a head start. We'll know soon enough. As they charged through the door, Kara took up and matched their stride. The morning was blustery and wet, with a thick drizzle. Leaden clouds promised a miserable day. At least it wasn't pouring rain. Kara's long blonde braid looked as if she'd left it done up wet all night. It hung heavy and limp, but Caitlin knew it looked better than her own matted locks. In contrast, Kara's red leather outfit looked to have been freshly cleaned. Their red leather was a point of pride for Mord Sith. Like a red flag, it announced to all the presence of a Mord Sith. Few words could convey the menace as effectively. The supple leather must have been treated with oils or wool fat. By the way, water beaded and ran from it. Caitlin always imagined that, as tight as it was, Mord Sith didn't undress so much as they shed their skin of leather. As they hurried down a passageway, Kara gave them an accusing glare.
You two had an adventure last night.
By the way, her jaw muscles flexed. It was easy enough to tell that Kara wasn't pleased to have been left to sleep while they struck out alone like helpless fawns to see if they could put themselves in grave danger of some sort for no good reason whatsoever.
I found the chicken that wasn't a chicken, Caitlin said.
She and Richard had been exhausted as they had trudged back to the spirit house through the dark, the mud, and the rain, and had spoken only briefly about it. When she asked, he told her he was looking for the chicken thing when he heard her voice coming from the place where Junie's body lay. She expected him to say something about her lack of faith in him, but he didn't. She told him she was sorry for giving him a rough day inasmuch as she hadn't believed him. He said only that he thanked the good spirits for watching over her. He hugged her and kissed the top of her head. Somehow she thought she would have felt better had he instead reproved her. Dead tired, they crawled beneath their blankets. Weary as she was, Caitlin was sure she would be awake the remainder of the night with the frightful memories of the incarnate evil she felt from the chicken thing. But with Richard's warm and reassuring hand on her shoulder, she had fallen asleep in mere moments.
No one has yet explained to me how you can tell this chicken is not a chicken,
Kara complained as they rounded a corner.
I can't explain it, Richard said. There was just something about it that wasn't right, a feeling.
Made the hairs at the back of my neck stand on end when it was near.
If you'd been there, Caitlin said, you'd understand. When it looked at me, I could see the evil in its eyes.
Kara grunted her skepticism.
Maybe it needed to lay an egg. It addressed me by my title. Ah, now that would tip me off, too.
Kara's voice turned more serious, if not troubled.
It really called you Mother Confessor?
Caitlin nodded to the genuine anxiety creeping onto Kara's face.
Well, actually it started to, but only spoke the mother part. I didn't wait politely to hear it finish the rest.
As the three of them filed in the door, Nissel rose from the buckskin hide on the floor before the small hearth. She was heating a pot of aromatic herbs above the small fire. A stack of tava bread sat close beside the hearth on the shelf, where it would stay warm. She smiled that odd little something only she knew smile of hers.
Mother Confessor, good morning. Have you slept well?
Yes, thank you. Nissel, what's wrong with Zed and Anne?
Nissel's smile vanished as she glanced at the heavy hide hanging over the doorway to the room in the rear.
I am not sure.
Well, then what's ailing them? Richard demanded when Caitlin translated. How are they sick? Fever? Stomach? Head? What? He threw up his arms. Have their heads come off their shoulders? Nissel held Richard's gaze as Caitlin asked his questions. Her odd little smile returned.
He is impatient, your new husband.
He is worried for his grandfather. He has great love for his elder. So, do you know what could be wrong with them?
Nissel turned briefly to give the pot a stir. The old healer had curious, even puzzling ways about her, like the way she mumbled to herself while she worked, or had a person balance stones on their stomach to distract them while she stitched a wound. But Kaelin also knew she possessed a sharp mind and was nearly peerless at what she did. There was a long lifetime of experience and vast knowledge in the hunched old woman. With one hand, Nissel drew closed her simple shawl, and at last squatted down before the grace, still drawn in the dirt in the center of the floor. She reached out and slowly traced a crooked finger along one of the straight lines radiating out from the center, the line representing magic.
"This, I think."
Kaelin and Richard shared a troubled look.
"You could probably find out a lot quicker," Kara said, "if you would just go in there and have a look for yourself."
Richard shot Kara a glower. "We wanted to know what to expect, if that's all right with you." Kaelin relaxed a bit. Kara would never be irreverent about something this important to them if she really believed it might be life or death battling beyond the hide curtain. Still, Kara knew little about magic, except that she didn't like it. Kara, like the fierce Daharan soldiers, feared magic. They were forever repeating the invocation that they were the steel against steel, while Lord Rahl was meant to be the magic against magic. It was part of the Daharan people's bond to their Lord Rahl. They protected him, he protected them. It was almost as if they believed their duty was to protect his body, so that in return his could protect their souls. The paradox was that the unique bond between Mord Sith and their Lord Rahl was a symbiotic relationship giving power to the Ajeel, the staggering instrument of torture a Mord Sith wore at her wrist. And more important, because of that ancient link to their Lord Rahl, Mord Sith were able to usurp the magic of one gifted. Until Richard freed them, the purpose of Mord Sith was not just to protect their Lord Rahl, but to torture to death his enemies who possessed magic, and in the process, extract any information they had. Other than the magic of a confessor, there was no magic able to withstand the ability of a Mord Sith to appropriate it. As much as Mord Sith feared magic, those with magic had more to fear from Mord Sith. But then, people always told Kaelin that snakes were more afraid of her than she was of them. Clasping her hands behind her back and planting her feet, Kara took up station. Kaelin ducked through the doorway as Richard held the hide curtain aside for her. Candles lit the windowless room beyond. Magical designs dappled the dirt floor. Kaelin knew they were not practice symbols, as the grace in the outer room had been. These were drawn in blood. Kaelin caught the crook of Richard's arm. "Careful. Don't step on any of these." She held out her other hand to the symbols on the floor. "They're meant to lure and snare the unwary." Richard nodded as he moved deeper into the room, weaving his way through the maze of ethereal devices. Zed and Anne lay head to head on narrow, grass-stuffed pallets against the far wall. Both were covered up to their chins with coarse woolen blankets. "Zed," Richard whispered as he sank to a knee, "are you awake?" Kaelin knelt beside Richard, taking his hand as they sat back on their heels. As Anne's eyes blinked open and she looked up, Kaelin took her hand too. Zed frowned as if exposing his eyes to even the mellow candlelight hurt.
"There you are, Richard. Good. We need to have a talk."
"What's the matter? Are you sick? What can we do to help?" Zed's wavy white hair looked more disheveled than usual. In the dim light, his wrinkles weren't so distinct, but he somehow still looked a very old man at that moment.
"Anne and I are just feeling a little tired out, that's all. We've been..."
He brought a hand out from under the blanket and gestured at the garden of designs sewn across the floor. Kara's leather was tighter than the skin stretched over his bones.
"Tell him," Anne said into the dragging silence, "or I will."
"Tell me what? What's going on?" Zed rested his bony hand on Richard's muscular thigh and took a few labored breaths.
"You know that talk we had, our what-if talk, about magic going away?"
"Of course."
"It's begun."
Richard's eyes widened. "It is the chimes, then."
"No," Anne said. "The Sisters of the Dark."
She wiped sweat from her eyes.
"In conjuring a spell to bring the chicken thing."
"The lurk," Zed said, helping her.
"In conjuring the lurk, they have
either intentionally or accidentally, begun a runaway degeneration of magic.
It wouldn't be accidental, Richard said. They would intend this. At least, Jigang would. And the Sisters of the Dark do his bidding. Zed nodded, letting his eyes close.
I'm sure you're right, my boy.
You weren't able to stop it then, Kaelin asked. You made it sound as if you would be able to counter it.
The verification webs we cast have cost us dearly.
Anne sounded as bitter as Kaelin would have been in her place.
Used up our strength.
Zed lifted his arm and then let it flop back down to rest again on Richard's thigh.
Because of who we are, because we have more power and ability than others, the taint of this atrophy is affecting us first.
Kaelin frowned. You said it would start with the weakest. Anne simply rolled her head from side to side. Why isn't it affecting us? Richard asked. Kaelin has a lot of magic with her confessor power, and I have the gift. Zed lifted his hand to give a sickly wave.
No, no, not the way it works. It starts with us. With me, more than Anne. Don't mislead them, Anne said. This is too important.
Her voice gathered a little strength as she went on.
Richard, Kaelin's power will soon fail. So will yours, though you don't depend on it as do we, or she, so it won't matter so much to you. Kaelin will lose her confessor's power, Zed confirmed, as will everyone of magic, everything of magic. She will be defenseless and must be protected.
I'm hardly defenseless, Kaelin objected. But there has to be a way for you to counter it. You said last night that you were not without resources of your own. Richard's fists tightened. You said you could counter it. You must be able to do something. Anne lifted an arm to weakly whack at the top of Zed's head.
Would you please tell him, old man, before you give the boy apoplexy and he is of no help to us?
Richard leaned forward. I can help. What can I do? Tell me, and I'll do it. Zed managed a feeble smile.
I always could count on you, Richard. Always could.
What can we do? Kaelin asked. You can count on us both.
You see, we know what to do, but we can't manage it alone.
Then we'll help you, Richard insisted. What do you need? Zed struggled to take a breath.
In the keep.
Kaelin felt a surge of hope. The Slif would spare them weeks of travel over land. In the Slif, she and Richard could get to the keep in less than a day. Seeming nearly insensate, Zed's breath wheezed out. In frustration, Richard pressed his own temples between thumb and second finger of one hand. He took a deep breath. He dropped the hand to Zed's shoulder and jostled gently.
Zed, what is it we can do to help? What about the wizard's keep?
What's in the keep? The old wizard swallowed lethargically.
In the keep? Yes.
Richard took another shaky breath, trying to preserve calm and reassurance in his own voice.
All right, in the keep. I understand that much. What is it you need to tell me about the keep, Zed?
Zed's tongue worked at wetting the roof of his mouth.
Water?
Kaelin put a hand on Richard's shoulder, almost as if to keep him from springing up and bouncing off the ceiling.
I'll get it.
Nissel met her at the doorway, but instead of the water Kaelin requested, handed her a warm cup.
Give him this. I have just finished making it. It is better than water. It will give him strength.
Thank you, Nissel.
Kaelin hurried the cup to Zed's lips. He gulped a few swallows. Kaelin offered the cup to Anne, and she finished it. Nissel leaned over Kaelin's shoulder to hand her a piece of tava bread, spread with something that looked like honey, and carried a faint smell of mint, as if laced with a curative. Nissel whispered to Kaelin to get them to eat some.
Here, Zed, Kaelin said. Have a bite of tava with honey.
Holding up his hand, Zed blocked the proffered food from his mouth.
Maybe later.
Kaelin and Richard glanced at each other out of the corner of their eyes. It was nearly unheard of for Zed to refuse food. Kara must have taken her belief that it wasn't serious from the calm Nissel. While the old healer seemed unruffled by the condition of the two on the floor, Richard and Kaelin's concern was mounting by the moment.
Zed, Richard prompted, now that his grandfather had had a drink. What about the keep?
Zed opened his eyes. Kaelin thought them a bit brighter, the hazel color more limpid, less cloudy.
He sluggishly grasped Richard's wrist.
I think the tea is helping. More.
Kalin twisted to the old woman.
He says the tea is helping. He would like more.
Pulling her head back, Nissel made a face.
Of course it helps. Why does he think I make it?
She shook her head at such foolishness and shuffled off to the outer room to retrieve more tea. Kalin was sure it wasn't her imagination that Zed seemed just the tiniest bit more alert.
Listen closely, my boy.
He lifted a finger for emphasis.
In the keep, there is a spell of great power, a sort of bottled antidote to the taint wafting through the world of life.
And you need it? Richard guessed.
Anne, too, looked to have been helped by the tea.
We tried to cast the counterspells, but our power has already deteriorated too much. We did not discover what was happening soon enough. But the vaporous spell in that bottle will do to the taint as the taint does to us,
Zed drawled. And thereby equalize the power so you can cast the counterspell and eliminate it, Richard impatiently finished in a rush.
Yes,
Zed and Anne said as one. Kalin smiled eagerly.
It's not a problem, then. We can get the bottle for you.
Richard grinned his zeal. We can get to the keep through the slough. We can retrieve this bottled spell of yours and be back with it in no time, almost. Anne covered her eyes with a hand as she muttered a curse.
Zed, did you never teach this boy anything?
Richard's grin gave out.
Why, what's wrong with that?
Nissel shuffled in, carrying two clay cups of tea. She handed one to Kalin and one to Richard.
Make them drink it all.
Nissel says you must drink this down, Kalin told them.
Anne sipped when Kalin held the cup to her lips. Zed wrinkled his nose, but then had to start swallowing as Richard poured the tea down his grandfather's gullet. Balking and coughing, he was forced to gulp it all or drown.
Now, what's the problem with us getting this spell thing from the keep?
Richard asked as his grandfather caught his breath.
First of all, Zed managed between gasps, you don't need to bring it here. You must only break the bottle. The spell will be released. It doesn't need direction. It's already created.
Richard was nodding.
I can break a bottle. I'll break it.
Listen, it's in a bottle designed to protect the magic. It will only be released if it's broken properly, with an object possessing the correct magic. Otherwise, it will simply evaporate without helping.
What object? How do I break the bottle correctly?
The Sword of Truth, Zed said. It has the proper magic to release the spell intact as it breaches the container.
That's not a problem. I left the sword in your private enclave in the keep.
But won't the sword's magic fail, too?
No. The Sword of Truth was created by wizards with the knowledge to ward its power from assaults against its magic.
So you think the Sword of Truth will stop a lurk?
Zed nodded.
Much of this matter is unknown to me, but I strongly believe this. The Sword of Truth may be the only thing with the power to protect you.
Zed's fingers gripped Richard's undershirt, pulling him close.
You must retrieve the sword.
His eyes brightened when Richard nodded earnestly. Zed tried to push himself up on an elbow, but Richard pressed a big hand to the old man's chest, forcing him to lie down.
Rest. You can get up after you rest. Now, where is this bottle with the spell?
Zed frowned at something and pointed behind Richard and Kalin. They both turned to look. When they didn't see anything but Kara watching from the doorway, they turned back to see Zed up on the elbow. He smiled at his little triumph. Richard scowled.
Now, listen carefully, my boy. You said you got into the first wizard's private enclave?
Richard's head bobbed as Zed talked.
And you remember the place?
Richard was still nodding.
Good. There is an entrance. A long walk between things.
Yes, I remember. The long entryway has a red carpet down the middle. To each side are white marble columns about as tall as me. There are different things atop each. At the end...
Yes,
Zed held up a hand as if to stop him.
The white marble columns. You remember them, the things atop them.
Some, not every one. There were gems and brooches, gold chains, a silver chalice. Finely wrought knives, bowls, boxes.
Richard paused with a frown of effort at recollection. He snapped his fingers.
Fifth column on the left has a bottle atop it. I remember because I thought it was pretty.
an inky black bottle with a gold filigree stopper. A sly smile stole onto Zed's face.
Quite right, my boy. That's the bottle.
What do I do? Just break it with the Sword of Truth?
Just break it.
Nothing fancy, no incantations, no placing it some certain place some certain way, no waiting for the right moon, no special time of day or night, no turning around first, nothing fancy?
Nothing fancy. Just break it with the sword. If it were me, I'd carefully set it on the floor, just in case my aim was bad and I knocked it off without breaking the glass, and it fell to the marble to break there. But that's me.
The floor it is, then. I'll set it on the floor and smash it with the sword. Richard started to rise. It will be done before dawn breaks tomorrow. Zed caught Richard's hand and urged him back down.
No, Richard, you can't.
He flopped back, sighing unhappily.
Can't what?
Richard asked as he leaned close once more. Zed took a few breaths.
Can't go in that slif thing of yours.
But we have to, Richard insisted. It will get us there in less than a day. Over land would take, I don't know, weeks. The old wizard lifted a grim finger toward Richard's face.
The slif uses magic. If you go in a slif, you will die before you reach Aedendrill. You will be in the dark recesses of that quicksilver creature, breathing her magic when that magic fails. You will drown. No one will ever find your body.
Richard licked his lips. He raked his fingers back through his hair. Are you sure? Might I be able to make it before the magic fails? Zed, this is important. If there is some risk, then we must take it. I'll go alone. I'll leave Kaelin and Kara. Alarm swelled in Kaelin's chest. The idea of Richard being in the slif and having its magic fail, of him drowning in the dark forever of the slif. She clutched at his arm to protest, but Zed spoke first.
Richard, listen to me. I am first wizard. I am telling you, magic is failing. If you go in the slif, you will die. Not maybe, will. All magic is failing. You must go without magic.
Richard pressed his lips tight and nodded. All right, then. If we must, then we must. It will take longer, though. How long can you and Anne? Zed smiled.
Richard, we are too weak to travel, or we would go with you now, but we will be fine. We would only slow you for no good reason. You can accomplish what must be done. As soon as you break the bottle and release the spell, then these things here, he gestured to the spells drawn all over the floor, will let us know. Once they do, I can cast the counter spells. Until then, the wizard's keep will be vulnerable. Extraordinarily powerful and dangerous things could be stolen when the keep's shields of magic fail. After I restore magic's power, anything stolen could then be used against us.
Do you know how much of the keep's magic will fail? Zed shook his head in frustration.
This is without precedent. I can't predict the exact sequences, but I'm sure all will fail. We need you to stay at the keep and protect it as you planned. Anne and I will follow after this business is finished. We're counting on you. Can you do that for me, my boy?
Richard, his eyes glistening, nodded. He took up his grandfather's hand. Of course. You can count on me.
Promise me, Richard. Promise me you will go to the keep.
I promise.
If you don't, Anne warned in a low voice, Zed's optimism about his being fine may prove flawed.
Zed's brow tightened.
Anne, you are making it sound. If I am not telling the truth, then call me a liar.
Zed rested the back of his wrist over his eyes and remained silent. Anne tilted her head back enough to meet Richard's gaze.
Am I making myself clear?
He swallowed.
Yes, ma'am.
Zed reached out for the comfort of Richard's hand.
This is important, Richard, but don't break your neck getting there.
Richard smiled. I understand. A swift journey, not reckless haste, is more likely to get you to your destination. Zed managed a low chuckle.
So you did listen when you were younger?
Always.
Then listen now.
The stick-like finger once more lifted from his slack fist.
You must not use fire if you can avoid it at all. The lurk could find you by fire.
How?
We believe the spell can seek by fire's light. It was sent for you, so it can search for you with fire. Keep away from fire. Water, too. If you must ford a river, use a bridge, if at all possible, even if you must go days out of your way. Cross streams on a log, or swing over on a rope, or jump if you can.
You mean to say we risk ending up like Junie if we go near water? Zed nodded.
I'm sorry to make it more difficult for you, but this is perilous business. The Lurk is trying to get you. You will only be safe. All of us will only be safe. If you can get to the keep and break that bottle before the Lurk finds you.
Undaunted, Richard smiled. We'll save time, not having to gather firewood or bathe. Zed again let out the breathy little chuckle.
Safe journey, Richard. And you too, Kara. Watch over Richard.
His stick-like fingers gripped Kalin's hand.
And you too, my new granddaughter. I love you dearly. Keep each other safe and well. I will see you when we reach Adendrill, and we will have the joy of each other's company again. Wait at the keep for us.
Kalin gathered up his bony hand in both of hers as she sniffled back the tears.
We will. We'll be there waiting for you. We'll be a family together again when you get there.
Safe journey all, Anne said. May the good spirits be with you always. Our faith and prayers will be with you too.
Richard nodded his thanks and started to rise, but then paused. He seemed to consider something for a moment. He spoke at last in a soft voice.
Zed, all the time I was growing up, I never knew you were my grandfather. I know you did that to protect me, but I never knew.
He fidgeted with a piece of grass sticking out of the pallet.
I never got a chance to hear about my mother's mother. She almost never spoke of her mother, just a word here and there. I never learned about my grandmother, your wife.
Zed turned his face away as a tear rolled down his cheek. He cleared his throat.
Erilyn was a wonderful woman. Like you have a wonderful wife now, so I once did too. Erilyn was captured by the enemy, by a quad sent by your other grandfather, Panis Rall, when your mother was very young. Your mother saw it all, what they did to her mother. Erilyn only lived long enough for me to find her. She was already at the brink of death, but I tried to heal her. My magic activated a sinister spell the enemy had hidden in her. My healing touch was what killed her. Because of what she saw, your mother found it painful to speak of Erilyn.
After an uncomfortable moment, Zed turned back to them and smiled with a memory of genuine joy.
She was beautiful, with gray eyes, like your mother, like you. She was as smart as you, and she liked to laugh. You should know that. She liked to laugh.
Richard smiled. He cleared his throat to find his voice. Then she surely married the right person. Zed nodded.
She did. Now, gather your things and be on your way to Adendrill so we can get our magic back to right. When we finally join you in Adendrill, I will tell you all the things about Erilyn, your grandmother, that I never could before.
He smiled a grandfather's smile.
We will talk of family.
Chapter 12
Fetch! Here, boy! Fetch!
The men laughed. The women giggled. Fitch wished his face wouldn't always go as red as his hair when Master Drummond mocked him with that epithet. He left the scrub brush in the crusty cauldron and scurried to see what the kitchen master wanted. Dashing around one of the long tables, his elbow whacked a flagon someone had set near the edge. He caught the heavy cobalt blue glass vessel just before it toppled to the floor. Exhaling in relief, he pushed it back near the stack of braided bread. He heard his name yelled again. Fitch jigged to a halt before Master Drummond, keeping his eyes to the floor. He didn't want a lump on his head for appearing to protest being the butt of jokes.
Yes, Master Drummond.
The portly kitchen master wiped his hands on a white towel he always kept tucked behind his belt.
Fitch, you have to be the clumsiest scullion I've ever seen.
Yes, sir.
Master Drummond stretched up on his toes, peering out the back window. Someone in the distance behind Fitch cursed as they burned themselves on a hot pan,
and in recoiling knocked metalware clattering across the brick floor near the baking hearth. There was no angry shouting, so Fitch knew it wasn't one of the other Haken scullions. Master Drummond gestured toward the service door of the sprawling kitchen.
"Fetch in some wood. We need the oak, and also a bit of apple to flavor the ribs."
"Oak and apple, yes, sir."
"And get a four-hand cauldron up on a racking crook first. Hurry up with the oak."
Fitch sagged with a,
"Yes, sir."
The big split slabs of oak for the roasting hearth were heavy and always gave him splinters. Oak splinters were the worst kind and would plague him for days after. The apple wasn't so bad, at least. It was going to be a big affair. He knew to bring enough of it.
"And keep your eye out for the butcher's cart. It's due here any minute. I'll wring Inger's neck if he sends it late."
Fitch perked up.
"Butcher's cart?"
He dared not ask what he wanted to ask.
"Would you like me to unload it, then, sir?"
Master Drummond planted his fists on his wide hips.
"Don't tell me, Fitch, that you're starting to think ahead."
Nearby, several women working at sauces snorted a laugh.
"Of course I want you to unload it. And if you drop any like the last time, I'll roast your scrawny rump instead."
Fitch bowed twice.
"Yes, Master Drummond."
As he withdrew, he moved aside to make way for the dairymaid, bringing a sample of cheese for Master Drummond's approval. One of the women's saucers snagged Fitch's sleeve before he could be off.
"Where are those skimmers I asked for?"
"Coming, Gilly, as soon as I see to..."
She snatched him by an ear.
"Don't patronize me," Gilly growled.
She twisted the ear.
"Your kind always fall to that in the end, don't they?"
"No, Gilly, I wasn't, I swear. I have nothing but respect for the Ander people. I daily school my vile nature so there may be no room in my heart or mind for hate or spite, and I pray the Creator gives me strength to transform my flawed soul, and that he burns me for eternity should I fail."
He prated by rote.
"I'll get the skimmers for you, Gilly. Please, let me get them."
She shoved his head.
"Go on, then, and be quick."
Comforting his throbbing ear, Fitch raced to the rack where he'd left the skimmers to dry. He snatched a handful and bore them to Gilly with as much respect as he could muster, considering that Master Drummond was watching out of the corner of his eye, no doubt thinking about beating him for not having the skimmers to Gilly sooner so he could be doing as ordered and have the cauldron hung and the firewood on its way in. He bowed as he held up the skimmers.
"I hope you see fit to take yourself to an extra penance assembly this week."
Gilly snatched up the skimmers.
"The humiliations from your kind we Anders must endure,"
she muttered with a rueful shake of her head.
"Yes, Gilly, I need the reassurance of an extra penance. Thank you for reminding me."
When she snorted her contempt and turned to her work, Fitch, feeling the shame of having thoughtlessly let his wicked nature demean an Ander, hurried off to get one of the other scullions to help him lift the heavy cauldron onto the racking crook. He found Morley up to his elbows in scalding water, and only too happy for any excuse to pull them free, even for heavy lifting. Morley checked over his shoulder as he helped lift the iron cauldron. It wasn't as hard for him as it was for Fitch. Fitch was gangly. Morley had a muscular build. Morley smiled conspiratorially.
"Big affair tonight. You know what that means?"
Fitch smiled that he did. With all the guests, there would be the noise of laughter, shouting, singing, eating, and drinking. With all that and people running hither and yon, wine and ale would be an endless supply, and whether in half-full glasses or half-full bottles, it would be little missed.
"It means one of the only advantages of working for the Minister of Culture," Fitch said.
Morley, the cords in his muscular neck straining from the weight, leaned closer over the cauldron as they lugged it across the floor.
"Then you'd better be more respectful of the Ender people, or you'll not have that advantage, nor the one of a roof over your head and meals to fill your belly."
Fitch nodded. He hadn't meant to be disrespectful. That was the last thing he would want to do. He owed everything to the Anders. But every now and then he felt the Anders took offense too easily, though he knew it was his insensitivity and ignorance that led to such misunderstandings. So he guessed he had no one to blame but himself. As soon as the cauldron was hung, Fitch rolled his eyes and hung his tongue out of the side of his mouth, intimating to Morley that they would drink themselves sick that night. Morley swiped his red Haken hair back from his face and simulated a drunken, if silent, hiccup before plunging his arms back into the soapy water. Smiling, Fitch trotted out the postern to retrieve the firewood. The recent drenching rains had moved east, leaving behind the sweet aroma of fresh, damp earth. The new spring day promised to be warm. In the distance, the lush fields of verdant new wheat shimmered in the sun. On some days, when the wind was from the south, the smell of the sea drifted in to wash over the fields, but not today, though a few gulls wheeled in the sky. Fitch checked the avenue each time he trotted back out for another armload, but didn't see the butcher's cart. His tunic was damp with sweat by the time he'd finished with the oak. He'd managed to hustle it in with only one splinter, a long one in the web of his thumb. As he plucked billets from the mound of apple wood, he caught the rhythmic creaking of an approaching cart, sucking at the painful oak splinter, trying unsuccessfully to catch hold of the buried end with his teeth. He surreptitiously glanced to the shade of the great oaks lining the long avenue into the estate and saw the plodding gait of Brownie, the butcher's swayback horse. Whoever was bringing the load was on the other side of the cart. With that and the distance, he couldn't tell who it was. Besides the butcher's cart, a number of other people were also arriving at the sprawling estate, everyone from scholars visiting the Andorith Library, to servants bringing messages and reports, to workers bringing wagons with deliveries. There were also a number of well-dressed people coming with some other business. When first Fitch had come to work in the kitchen, he had found it and the whole estate a huge and baffling place. He had been intimidated by everyone and everything, knowing it would be his new home and he had to learn to fit into the work if he was to have a sleeping pallet and food.